We've all been looking at what's going on down in Kenya, and certainly in the update and various other things that I brought to people, the view of the situation as far as we can see actually on the ground, because there are people down there that are in contact with us. I know one person, that Kenneth, is actually going into the different areas, trying to actually assess the different areas and also find out what is going on with the brethren in these different areas. And he was trying to get across to Migori, which is one of the places we visited just over a month ago. He got as far as Kisii, which is about halfway, something like that, between Kisumu and Migori. And there was no more transport then from that point forward, and he had to turn back. We finally wired a little bit of help, extra help, for the maize prices doubled and tripled over there. But it is still a difficult situation over there, and the entire thing, as far as we can tell, when we were down there just over a month ago, it was fine. I mean, there was no real hint of this. The elections were building; they were building up towards the elections later on in December. But there was no real hint of this until afterwards, and then we find that the president, the incumbent president, decided to stay there, and he's in his 80s. I mean, just staggering, really. He in fact was deciding to stay there regardless of the election results, because the election results seem to have been rigged. You know, there would be, say, one count in one of the outlying areas, clearly showing the opposition leader having won. They would get back to Nairobi, and suddenly the count would suddenly miraculously change, giving win across to the president. And this erupted in political violence as really the only means that they could see of dealing with the situation and putting in the person that they wanted to have in power. But you know, it's all part of this world and this world's political system. And as we look at the news, even in the United States, it's interesting that what in fact has happened over there. It looked almost certain. In fact, over here, the newscasters were saying how Obama is going to go ahead and bring this enormous sea change within the United States politics, and how everything was pointing in that direction. And then, all of a sudden, with all the polls pointing to that direction, all of a sudden, Mrs. Clinton suddenly came from nowhere and just overtook Obama and actually came and won that particular stage of the election. And in the paper here, this is a Thursday's paper, it says, the pollsters are at a loss to explain why they got it so wrong. American news organizations and polling firms launched urgent inquiries yesterday after every main survey, notice, every main survey failed to predict Hillary Clinton's victory in New Hampshire. In one of the biggest polling errors in the history of the industry, every leading survey put Barack Obama ahead in the final 2 days before Tuesday's vote, all but one by between 5 and 13 percentage points. So they got it really badly wrong, and they think, well, why? How on earth can that be the case? In the end, he lost by 3 points. So it swung from anything up to about 13 points in his favour to a 3-point loss, quite frankly. And the only real thing that they can come up with how did this actually happen? How was it that Mrs. Clinton came from behind and came and won that particular section of the contest? The article here, it says, under the Hillary the Cumber Gal Stuns Obama, and this was from Thursday, it says about Bill Clinton, the former U.S. president, said his wife Hillary won the New Hampshire primary because people saw who she was when she became emotional when chatting to voters. And apparently, it goes on that she said that she was moved that in the middle of a political campaign, another person actually expressed genuinely concern for her. And it was touching. People forgot politicians are human, and she was just very moved by it. And she called me and said, I can't believe what happened today. That's why I've got to be very careful about showing my emotions, because I'd cry a lot. He says, in what her advisers claimed was a turning point in a former First Lady's White House bid, Mrs. Clinton was asked on Monday by undecided voter Marianne Pernot Young How do you do it? How do you keep up? And her eyes filled with tears, and her voice dropped to a whisper, and she replied, you know, this is very personal for me, and it's not just political, it's not just public. I see what's happening, we have to reverse it. Now, the Eve of Poll moment played repeatedly then on television for the following 24 hours, and it came through during the forum which with undecided voters in a coffee shop in Portsmouth, New Hampshire. So, in a coffee shop, there was a random interview. She happened to... Not even an interview. It was actually chatting with people in the coffee shop, and it just so happened that it touched a nerve, and there were certain tears in her eyes. The cameras caught that. They broadcast it over 24 hours and changed what could have been a 13-point lead for Obama into a 3-point loss. Now, I read that because it gives an indication of just how fickle the system that the mankind puts all of its faith into is. It is incredibly fickle. If you just turn over to Isaiah chapter 2. Isaiah chapter 2. And in this, you know, in both elections, both down in Kenya and also in what we're seeing here in America, and we'll continue to see in America for what, best part of a year, isn't it? I don't know how long the elections last over here, about a month, something like that. But they seem to go on forever over there. But in Isaiah chapter 2 it says, and it shall come to pass in verse 2, and it shall come to pass in the last days that the mountain of the Eternal's house will be established in the top of the mountains and be exalted above the hills, and all nations shall flow to it. Now this is God's system. This is God's government that we're looking at. And many people shall go and say, come and let us go up to the mountain of the Eternal, to the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we'll walk in his paths. For out of Zion shall go forth the law and the word of the Eternal from Jerusalem. So we're looking at when the church has got itself sorted properly, out of Zion, out of the area around Jerusalem, where the church is going to be based at that time as the bride of Christ, as the very temple of the living God. The law will then proceed. There'll be a certain standard set and be set by the people who God currently is training. And he shall judge among the nations and shall rebuke many people, and they shall beat their swords to plowshares and spears to pruning hooks. Nation shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war any more. Now, the political rhetoric isn't going to be around whether, in fact, you've got tears in your eyes in a coffee shop when somebody asks a particular question. That basically isn't the case. It is a fact that, you know, people will not be lifting up sword against one another, will not go ahead and have wars, and there will be a peace that will come on this earth, and it is the way of the Eternal that will build the peace. And that's what we're learning now. That's what it's all about. That's what the entire church is for. And yet we read in these papers, I mean, another thing that's going on at the moment in the papers, it says the Sarkozy soap opera is granted court approval. Now, if you know, President Sarkozy in France has, in fact, divorced his wife, and he's now living with, as far as I can tell, an Italian, what is she? She's a model of some description. And obviously it's over all the papers. And then there's an interview with his wife, which somebody has done, and they're trying to get a book published. And, you know, it goes on and on. It's basically a soap opera that is actually taking place. Here's another one as far as the race over in the States. This is from today's paper. It says, what makes him so good, and talking about Mr. Obama now, is biblical cadences come naturally to him as if he was a great preacher, though this is not a quality which can be adequately be illustrated by quotation. In other words, he is able to use biblical quotations, but in a way that attracts the vote, but has nothing really to say. In other words, he's not going to go ahead and quote what we've just gone ahead and read here, and actually say what this really means. There's no real understanding within it. But his delivery is needed to make the words sing. In other words, you've got to watch him actually in action in order to see the words sing. What he's actually saying isn't the big issue. Says he's also extraordinary rapport with ordinary Americans and the ability to articulate in generous ways their polite but burning anger at the state of their country. And as I queued to get into the rally, I spoke to some of the people waiting with patient civility outside. As far as sex, race and age were concerned, they were a diverse lot, though I couldn't help noticing one thing. One thing. What's the thing that actually sets the camp of Obama apart from the other camp? Well, this is what they were saying. They couldn't help noticing that, like Mr. Obama himself, they were almost all thin. In other words, like attracts, in that sense. Everybody that was going in to see him was thin. And in America, that is something which is unusual. That really is unusual. And yet that was the only thing that he could see that actually separated them from what the run-of-the-mill American populace going in to actually see him in action. Another one to give you an idea. It says, children, this is again from today's paper, this is over here, children of 16 may be given the vote. Now, we've gone ahead and have suffragettes and all the rest of it through the history of this country, but it says the voting age could be lowered to 16 to encourage young people to get involved with politics, Harriet Harman has suggested. In an interview with the Daily Telegraph, the deputy leader of the Labour Party and leader of the House of Commons warned that drastic action was needed to tackle a crisis in Britain's democracy called by the low turnout among the younger voters. Now, if you go and actually, the analysis within the paper, and I haven't got it here, but the analysis within the paper is also quite interesting. And they were saying that really, when you look at the actual effect of a vote, or an effect of bringing somebody into power, you find that today, the effect is very minimal. Why? Because most of the power has actually shifted across to Europe. And most of the decisions are being made in Europe by bureaucrats, so the vote means nothing. Therefore, people don't go out to vote. And the voting has actually changed. At one time back in, I believe it was the 60s, the voting was 90-something percent of people that went out. In recent years, it has dropped to something like 54%. Now, that's a phenomenal drop. Now, this was in certain areas. But the people are not really that interested. If you notice what it says, this particular section here in Isaiah chapter 2, it goes on then into tell God's people in verse 22 of Isaiah 2, cease from man whose breath is in his nostrils, for wherein is he to be accounted of? In other words, you're not going to look for anything that is of any real substance in a human being. A human being, this is verse 22 now. He says, for behold, the Lord, the Eternal of hosts, takes away from Jerusalem and Judah the stay and the staff and the stay of bread and the whole stay of water. Now the context is this government of God that will be established. The context is to do with the government of God. And he says, the mighty man, the man of war, the judge, the prophet, the prudent, the ancient, the captain of 50, the honorable man, the counselor, the cunning artificer, artificer and the eloquent orator, and I will give children to be their princes. Babes shall then rule over them. Now it's in a context of government, and it is giving, saying that what is actually coming out is something which is like having children ruling over us. And the people shall be oppressed, every one by another, and every one by his neighbour. And it says, verse 6, it says, when a man shall take hold of his brother in the house of his father, saying, you've got clothing, you be the ruler, and let this ruin be under your hand. It's going to get to a point where the entire country is going to be, well, you have this ruin. You look after this ruin, because you can look after yourself. And it goes on, it says in verse 12, it says, for as for my people, children are their oppressors, women rule over them, and my people, those that lead you, cause you to err and destroy the way of your paths. And it goes right back to what it was saying in chapter 2, where it says that and many people shall go in verse 3 and say, come and let us go to the mountain of the Eternal, the house of the God of Jacob, and he will teach us of his ways, and we'll walk in his paths. And it is in that context that we see this contrast between what we have today. And it's not just talking about within society, it is talking about within the church as well, incidentally, if you look at it in the way in which I believe it should be taken. But in what we see today within society, and even within the church, and what in fact is needed for the future. Now it's interesting that in the paper, in dealing with this particular problem, there was an article, this is coming from Friday's, from yesterday's paper. It says, presidential wannabes must not ignore the perils that lurk abroad. It says, Jerusalem may seem a mighty long way from New Hampshire, but rather than dwelling on the excitement generated by this week's extraordinary primary results, The surveying candidates of the 2008 presidential contest would be well advised to concentrate their energies on the issues being raised by the current incumbent's Middle Eastern tour. In other words, what's going on in the Middle East currently is going to have a great deal more effect than who, in fact, is in the White House because of one person displaying emotion within a coffee house. That's what's being said. For a nation at war, one of the more surprising aspects of the campaign to date is that the candidate's primary focus has been on humdrum domestic concerns rather than the big security issues such as how to win the global war on terror or how to protect the American mainland from future September 11th-style terrorist attacks. Now, there's one even talking about this. It is on the trivia. And people are putting people into power on trivia. And you go down to Kenya. I mean, were there issues being discussed in the Kenyan election? Absolutely not. How did the people vote? On tribal lines. And the reason why that Kenneth could not travel from Kisumu across to Migori and only got as far as Kisi is because the Kisi tribe gave allegiance to the president, the incumbent president. And the Luos that then surround them in Migori and also in Kisumu basically massacred them. So the trouble was in that specific area, and he could get as far as Kisi, the kind of capital of the tribal area, and could go no further. It's a tribal thing. It wasn't the big issue. It wasn't the big issues of Africa. And Africa, let's face it, has got some enormous issues. And this is the problem. Here in Isaiah 2, there are people here that have got to learn the ways of God so that they can then go ahead and be with Christ and implement ways and policies for the big issues of this world. And we might think that sitting here in church services, listening to Mr. Armstrong speak 20-odd years ago about the way of give and the way of get and the two trees has no bearing. And that's bunkum. It has everything. It has everything to say to each and every one of us. And when we look at what is happening within the paper, as it says, the success of the military surge that Mr. Booth authorized in late 2006, and whose benefits first came to light last summer, has made Iraq a non-issue, and with it the wider debate on future American policy for persecuting the war against terrorism. America might well have in excess of 300,000 combat troops stationed in war zones ranging from Iraq and Afghanistan to the Horn of Africa. But the rhetoric on the presidential campaign so far is mainly concerned with which candidate, whether Republican or Democrat, is best equipped to satisfy the American people's desire for change, in quotes, from the hard-edged right-winged ideology that has defined the Bush years. Obama's slick but meaningless soundbite, quote, I'm for politics of hope instead of a politics of fear, whenever he is asked about how he would deal with a repeat of the September 11th attack, sums up the attitudes of most of the leading candidates on national security issues. It's easier to lose votes than to win them raking over the coals of Iraq and Al-Qaeda. So the best advice is to steer well clear unless the discussion is absolutely necessary. But however much the presidential wannabes would like to stay in the comfort zone of welfare reform and tax breaks, the big national security issues are simply not going to go away and disappear as Mr. Bush attempts to revive the Israeli-Palestine peace process this week has illustrated. So we're looking at what's going on in the Middle East is going to have everything to do with America, but what is actually going on in the presidential campaign has nothing to do with those issues, not to speak of. And it in fact is degenerating and seems to degenerate so often in these kind of campaigns, down to the trivia, down to the soundbite that's played repeatedly over a 24-hour period, and suddenly a 13% loss turns into a 3% gain because of a soundbite that's just replayed. And that, as far as they can tell, or perhaps that somebody was thin, and therefore they'll go and see him. And as I say, we need to understand that when we're looking at Isaiah 2 and the context about children being their princes and babes being ruling over them, the context is all about these people who, in fact, are going to be with Christ, ruling, and when he judges amongst many the nations and rebuke many people, and they put their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks.